listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tolinsky and Wes Boss.
Welcome to Syntax. Today we've got part two of a spooky web development stories. These are stories that people have sent in, and we're going to read them off to you. Just horror stories of deleting the database or accidentally pushing something to production, or cringeworthy stories of web development where it all went wrong. Today, we are sponsored by two awesome companies. First one is LogRocket, and second one is Netlify. We'll talk about them partway through the episode. Oh, I forgot to do spooky voices.
Ooh.
How are you doing today, Scott?
Do good. Tired style. I had meetings because I have meetings now. I don't know if you know this. I have meetings because there's people on my dev team that we meet. And so I've been just talking into a microphone all day.
Just meetings for the rest of your life.
Yeah, I know, right?
I just went to the dentist and they used like a little mini sandblaster on my teeth. Have you ever had that happen?
Yeah. Ugh. My dentist is like hyper modern. They do x-rays with this thing that looks like a literal 1950s depiction of a ray gun. Like it looks just like that. And you just like click it on the side of your head and you're done. It takes like 2 seconds. But the cleaning they do almost entirely via a water sprayer. Is that weird? Like a water blaster?
I was much prefer that over the scratching with the little pick.
Oh my gosh. It's so efficient and so good. I have like a receding gum on the inside because I used to have a tongue piercing. Yeah. So it like receded my gum and I hate going to the dentist.
Yeah, they berate me all day long at the dentist. Oh, can't take it.
They don't berate me. They use me as a shining example because I started flossing in the past like 5 or 6 years more routinely. And I used an app to do it. And so now they tell all of their other clients, they're like, he used an app. We got to use an app to get you flossing.
They're trying to get me to buy a electric toothbrush. So...
Dude, you got to get an electric toothbrush. Sonicare all the way, day. All day. All
right, maybe get ready for some sick pics in the future. I think I'm going to pull the trigger.
We got the latest Sonicare. You got the wireless charging. You just pop it in. It buzzes on your teeth. It tells you when you're done. It couldn't be any easier. And my teeth have been way better for it.
I'm doing it. You got to do it. I'm an adult now. All right. So we've got the stories for you today.
Banter. Lots of banter. You want banter? We got it.
And none of it is about the weather, so you're welcome. Listen to this. Scott was chit-chatting with his bud, Jack Resider, over on Twitter. And as you know, Jack Resider runs the Darknet Diaries podcast, which is probably one of my favorite podcasts.
Fantastic.
So he just talks about like security issues, dark web, breaches, things like that. And he just like tells it. My favorite ones are the pen testers where people like...
The pen tester interviews.
Yeah, they go into like real world situations and it's just an awesome podcast. And he agreed to take one of these stories and read it. And like, he stayed true to the story, but he just, the way he embellished upon it and it's amazing. So we are going to play that for you right now. And then we'll come back with just regular Scott and Wes, which is not as good.
Have you ever thought about email storms? Like, for instance, suppose you have your out-of-office reply on and you send an email to someone who also has their out-of-office reply on. As soon as you send them an email, their auto-reply sends you an email right back saying they're out of office. But wait, you also have the same auto-reply on too. So shouldn't your inbox respond saying, hey, I'm out of office too? And then as soon as that email gets sent to them, their responders comes back saying, I'm still out of office. Why are you trying to email me? And so on and so on. Well, luckily that doesn't happen because someone must have made a mistake at some point in the past. But this is a story about an email storm that didn't end so well. I was working on an app which included email integration, and I needed to test SendGrid's email API. And I needed to see what was in the notification, which triggered when something was sent through the API. So I wrote a webhook for SendGrid to send a post request, and that would forward the contents of the post request to myself and another developer by email using SendGrid. So I sent the post request and got the email notification. But then I got 2 more, and then 4 more. And then 8 more, then 16, 32, 64, 128, 256, 512, 1,024 emails just showed up in my inbox, and so on and so on. It only took me a minute or so to realize my mistake, but by that time, my mistake had triggered more than 75,000 emails. See, every time me or that other developer would get an email, SendGrid would trigger that notification email and tell me that emails were sent successfully. So for every email sent to us, two more notifications were generated and also sent to us by email. This email storm ripped through our office like a Category 4 hurricane. See, our email servers were hosted on-premises in our offices. So not only did I knock out email for everyone in our office, but the exponential growth of inbound emails DOSed the office's internet connection for the rest of the day. Immediately, we called the IT support company who managed this email server, but every time they would try to remote into it and clear the queue, the remote session would just freeze up. Over and over, they desperately tried to weather the storm, but they couldn't. Eventually, they had to get in the car and come do an on-site visit and fix the problem. And for a few days after that, our offices still didn't have a functional email server. This was a nightmare scenario which has haunted me for years after. I'm Jack Reesider, and I hope you enjoyed this story.
Thanks, Jack, for recording this for us, by the way. It's fantastic.
Yeah, definitely check out Darknet Diaries. I really appreciate it. Let's get going with the different stories. In almost all of these, we didn't actually mention the name of the company or the person, just so that we get no one in trouble. But this person, it's kind of important which company it was, and they said it was fine. This one is called Dirty Dick's JSON, which is from Dick's Sporting Goods. I worked for Dick's Sporting Goods for several years. While I was there, the structure of the engineering tier was a bit odd, to say the least. The backend engineering team and the front-end engineering team were completely separate teams. They didn't have any direct interaction and didn't even touch some of the code base. Due to the separation, my team as front-end engineers often had no clue how about the backend was actually set up. It sounds ridiculous, but it's true. Well, one day I was monitoring XHR requests on the website and saw an odd JSON called bannedwords.json get loaded in. So I opened up that bad boy to see what was in side, and to my surprise, it was hundreds of words that I simply cannot repeat on this platform. I actually have used that JSON file before. There is a file on the web of every bad word you could possibly ever imagine.
You think Dix is in there?
They probably had to do a custom.
They probably had to tweak it.
They had to really fork it and release their own bad words.json. I was absolutely shocked. It turns out the backend team was using this to filter out search requests that had bad words listed in the file. I couldn't believe what was in this list was loaded into the client side. What if somebody found it? Well, a month later, so I did nothing about it. Sure enough, a month later, I pop open Reddit and I see trending on our web dev, Dick's Sporting Goods, bad words.json. It was an interesting day at the office.
That's very funny. I have a close relationship with Dick's. I think I've been there a bunch of times because I bought all my workout equipment there on Black Friday. So I pop into Dick's all the time and get plates. It's cheap workout equipment there. So shout out to Dick's Sporting Goods if you are looking to buy a squat rack on the cheap. Ours is held up really nicely. Nice. So advertisement for Dick's. Shout out to Dick's. All right, next question. Next story.
CMS disaster.
I moved from design to engineering. So I had some code experience, but never really dealt with environments. After a grueling few hours of setting up the AMP stack natively on my machine, httpd.conf and all, I got Expression Engine up and running.
AMP is Apache, MySQL, and PHP, not the Google attempt to control the web.
AMP pages or whatever that is. Shout out to Expression Engines too. I haven't used that in a little bit. The last step is to replace some global vars, the local points to the dev URL instead of prod URL, but not yet being trained to pay close attention if I was looking at the site.dev rather than site.com. I swapped them out on prod. The site completely tanked. The marketing site was the main login for the app, so support blew up. The company basically stopped. Senior leadership team was doing rounds trying to get to the bottom of it. Because the break happened via fields inside of the CMS, the CMS was down as well. A senior eventually had to go in and manually change the values from the database to get things up and running again, pure live edit the database style. Again, this was my first day moving into engineering. I was mortified and certain they were going to boot me back into design forever. Yes, I think this one's very relatable.
I've done this.
I don't know if I've done this. I feel like I've done this in WordPress,
or done WordPress.
This maybe even Expression Engine, but like There is like a lot of specific situations when you can edit something in a WYSIWYG and bring down the whole site. Like, that's very scary
to me.
You
want me to tell you a good UI for this? Is I've done it on WordPress before. You change the site URL on WordPress and then you save it and then it's just white screen. And like, you can't, you have to go into the database to fix it. Yeah. My router has an awesome UI for this. And when you hit save, and it makes a possibly a breaking change, like you change the URL of, or you change the firewall rules or something like that, it will save. And then if it doesn't get a ping back from the browser within a minute, it will revert the change back, because obviously you went missing to the browser, and it will roll back that change for you, which I thought was awesome.
That's neat. It's sort of like that, you know, when you change the resolution.
That's
it. It's like, do you want to keep this resolution? Yeah.
Or am I upside down right now?
Yes.
Next one is the Oh No Hotel.
Oh No Hotel.
I accidentally mounted an endpoint in production that pointed to a staging route for hotel reservations. I think about 400 people made a reservation that was wiped after a database cleanse. That was a bad day. Not sure how I get my job.
Oh my gosh. Next one, FTP. Once in my career, I needed to create an FTP user for a client's website. Due to some wonky permissions, I had set up their home directory to the root of the site so I could FTP into the web root. Once I was done, I removed the FTP user and left the also delete user home directory. About 15 minutes later, it dawned on me what I did. Thankfully, the server host had a very decent backup. So what, they left this bit that deletes the user's home directory, but they...
It's when you have a...
deleted the FTP user. So it, what did it do? It like went to the admin or something?
When you add a FTP user, usually what it does is it gives that new user its own like subdirectory. But he created an FTP for the root. And then when you delete it, it says, hey, you're getting rid of this user. Do you also want to delete their files? But it was the root.
It got rid of the root. Gotcha. Seems like there should be some protection for that.
Yeah, rough. Next one, push notification hell. A new-to-me code base was working on some push notification issues, and there was a difference between the local setup and the production setup while doing that. I sent a dozen increasingly more frustrated test push notifications. Turns out, it wasn't just me that was getting the messages, and the entire team was notified. I notified everyone on the team that I was just getting test messages out. Shoot, not a big deal. It's a tech company, and SHIT happens, until the tweets start coming in and emails from investors that not only was it the internal team, but the entire user base.
Whoa.
Oops. Last time I swore, wrote witty, despising push notification messages. I think that's sort of a trend of these, is don't ever write a swear in any of your console logs or images, or
you just never know. Man. Yeah. You never know when people are going to see it. Back in 2005, I worked on a web app for a DVD retail chain. Moving on from server plus client apps required by dial-up to a single full-time online app. On the launch day, I discovered that the central DB synced from the client DBs was completely broken. Nobody tested data integrity. Oopsies. People from branches just called, "We see people from different cities in our system, and ours are missing." Hashtag ghosts. Nice little hashtag there. I spent the day VNCing to local PCs, dumping the databases through MySQL admins and compiling the central DB manually. All that after a brutal 2-day launch. All of those 3 days, I listened to David Bowie's album, Let's Dance, 70 times. Let's dance. Da, 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 da. Yeah.
He probably, whenever you hear that music, you just... It's true. I remember, I have that with Owl City. Remember Owl City?
You know what? Actually, back when I was trying to become a musician, I had a lot of contacts with the Owl City guy, because we were doing similar types of music. And there was a website. It was called the, if this is not what it's called, let me know. The 60, you might not have ever heard of this. It's called the 61, all lowercase letters, the 61. I don't know if it still exists. It looks like it's closed. But this was like a music streaming app where people would upvote songs. And so you could enter them under hashtags and people would upvote them or whatever. And the Owl City guy, he like kind of blew up on there first and foremost.
Wow.
And we were in the same communities of making songs. And he sent me a couple messages because he liked some of my music. And then he got really popular and I never heard from him again.
That's awesome. I just associate that music with learning to code MySpaces. And every time I hear it, it brings me right back.
Yeah, that's very MySpace era music.
That's funny how music can do that. Next one is called Bad Words Again. So this is another one about bad words. I wrote a bad regex to check for bad words in a modal, and it alerted the user humorously of bad words, and they said not to say it. Unfortunately, it matched substrings in words and alerted banking HR managers that they were saying ass and TIT when they were writing assistant and title. I remember when I was a kid, I was writing a Microsoft Word shopping list for my mom. And one of the things on the list was fruit cocktail. And every time I wrote it, this huge thing would pop up on my computer. And I would be like, what? Like, what's bad about fruit cocktail?
What about, was it just fruit cock?
No, it was matching part of the word. It wasn't, the software probably wasn't smart enough to.
I thought it
realized the word and I hadn't had time to finish it. That's why we need AI.
Why we need it. This next story is Mo Money. As a junior dev in my first web dev job, I left a variable as 0 instead of 1 in the payment gateway. This stopped certain cards from being allowed to pay. No one noticed for a year. Yeah. I got a final written warning and confidence destroyed. Don't assume it works. Prove it does, which is a great point. Yeah, check that.
So this is the first time I heard of someone actually getting canned for a mistake like that.
A year. They left it in for a year. And how did nobody notice for a year? That seems like operational issues.
Yeah, that's crazy. Next one, Bass Ackwards. My first job out of college was at a prominent review and feedback management company. If someone bought a product from one of our clients, we would send them an email asking them for feedback and a review. In other words, we spam people with emails. We were having a formatting issue in some of our templates. A senior dev pushed up a change and we marked the bug as fixed. The next day, we received several frustrated calls when they found out all their emails were being sent backwards. Every single word backwards.
Whoa.
So, example, dear customer became R-E-M-O-S. It's like not just like customer dear. It's the actual word was backwards.
Remote suck read.
Remote suck read. The commit was reverted, but thousands of emails had already been sent. It was an interesting day, and I always remember watching our senior dev furiously revert code for the first time. I love the show in y'all's course. I wonder what that was. Do you think that was like a, what do you think? Like a CSS right to left?
I have no idea. Yeah, I don't think CSS right to left, does it?
Does it reverse the?
No, I don't think it does. Well, I guess it does. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know, man.
I don't know. I have no idea on this one. All right, next one. Taxi coding. I made an Electron game to run on in-store screens in 5 major brand stores for the launch of a new flagship device. Installation happened the night before. So I went to the first store with the crew to oversee. I found a breaking bug and spent the next 12 hours coding in a taxi next to the client on 3G. So much pressure, I couldn't remember if a JS filter removed or kept values in a true condition. Dancing with the devil with 5% battery and 3 Docker images to build and publish, managed to find a pub at 8 a.m. to celebrate the job well done. Yeah, I've had actually my share of pullover. I had to one time I was on the ski hill. I was on Winter Park, Mary Jane, and I had to ski all the way down the hill to my car to go get my computer to fix a bug that was in production at that very moment that I had gotten an email about while I was on the chairlift. So yeah, shout out to you. I had a similar situation. Oh
man, this one I thought about all weekend. I just kept thinking back to the poor guy sitting in the back of a cab that's probably just sitting there running and fixing it. Wow, that's rough. Glad that you can find a pub at 8 a.m. That would not happen in Canada. Next one is bad ENV. Not sure if that's the kind of story you're after, but in a company I work for, we had an absolute madness of packages with weird dependencies to each other. So every time we had a switch between projects, which is regular because we worked on six different sites, we had to yarn unlink RMRF, the whole yarn link directory, yarn install, and yarn link again. This on average would take at least half an hour out of each dev's day. Oh, and another nightmare that there was no hot reloading for the sites. Every time you made a change, even if it was just to change a margin in a SAS issue, it would take 40 to 50 seconds to rebuild. I miss the Ruby SAS times where the refresh took less than 10 seconds. Oh,
yeah. Let me describe to you a nightmare. Here's a nightmare. Yarn link. That's it. That's the nightmare. That's the whole nightmare. It is very hard, and you never know if what you're doing is working or not working. It's very frustrating. I don't know if you've done any yarn linking or NPM.
I have, but in a lot of cases, if I have to edit a module that I'm using, I just go into node modules and start hacking away at it. And then
start hacking, yeah.
It's usually you're working on the bundled version, not on the main version, but it's a pain.
That's exactly what I do. Yeah, I just had to node module. Because, yeah, especially if the parent repo is like a mono repo, and then you're just like asking to make yourself very frustrated.
Those are probably the biggest pains to me is like when development is slow, you're like, I can code and think much faster, but this thing is getting in my way and I'm so slow and frustrated with it.
Yeah, I know. I'm spending some time implementing Snowpack right now. And I'm very looking forward to the future where I save something and it's just updated that next instant. All right. Next story is log in as I once left some debug code in when checking an error for a user that logged everybody into his account. So that account has been compromised, I would say. I think that's safe to say that account's been compromised. Everybody get to log in as the same person. That sounds fun.
That sucks. Email subscribers plugin. So my task was transferring a WordPress site from one server to another. We were pretty rookie, so we were setting it all up manually. We set up all the plugins and then imported the content. Years worth of posts. Unfortunately, we didn't notice there was an email subscribers plugin that emails a subscriber every single time that a post is published. So this is pretty common. People say, yeah, I want to get an email when there's a new blog post. There's a plugin, you throw it in and it works like that. So when we imported 100 plus posts, it ended up sending an email for every single post to every single subscriber. Oh, you think it would detect that?
There's a lot of these. Yeah. It's like, oh man, there should be some systems in place here. Yeah. All right, next one. 1 in 300 chance of the C word. I once wrote a pronounceable password generator. The theory being that it generated passwords made up of random vowels combined with consonant pairs would create a string, which wasn't a real word, but could be pronounced, and therefore would be easier to remember. It was used during the password reset flow of a web app whose demographic skewed towards very non-tech savvy, many of which would have problems even copy and pasting. It was in production for several months and had generated thousands of passwords before another dev received a new password, which had contained the C word. And then he wrote, yes. That C word. One of the consonant pairs I had used was NT. The function had roughly a 1 in 300 chance of including the C word somewhere within the generated string. 1 in 300. Yeah, not great odds for putting a C word into your generator. That's pretty good.
That would have got some. I have random store names in one of my courses, and it just takes like a adjective and a couple vowels. And someone got angry, unsightly women. And they're like, you should probably check this. I'm like, yeah, I probably shouldn't have that possibility, but it's also random. So,
yeah. Like what? Yeah. Yeah. How do companies like Heroku or, you know, how do they deal with that stuff?
I don't know. That's a good question. Like Netlify does it as well, where they like generate random possible pairs. And like, how do you go through all the permutations? Because there's millions of possible combos. I don't know. That's a good question. Next one. Production target. When I joined as a new grad, I was asked to learn about load testing and load testing our staging servers. I learned about Gatling, which I just looked that up, and that is an open source load testing framework. And after I figured out how it works, I ran my Gatling load test script. I think I set it about 100,000 concurrent users. That's kind of cool, actually. Maybe we should do a show about that. I think that'd be kind of a cool tool.
I'm interested. Yeah.
3 minutes later, we all start getting alert emails and calls saying someone was trying to take our servers down. I also didn't realize it was me until I noticed that I set the production script to be target the production servers. I did not get fired, thankfully.
Hey, that's great. And let me tell you, you also will not get fired if you use one of our sponsors. I'm talking about LogRocket, because LogRocket allows you to find bugs in your application very easily and very quickly by giving you a session replay. Now, what is a session replay? Well, it's a video, scrubbable video that gives you the network tabs and shows you the user's mouse, where they clicked on, how they were able to do all this stuff. So this way you would have seen potentially somebody firing off this Gatling and seeing that it was your mouse. It was the killers coming from inside of the house, that whole thing. So you'll want to check out LogRocket at logrocket.com/syntax, and you'll get 14 days for free. Again, you get a scrubbable video replay that includes not only the video of what happened, but also the network tab and the console and all sorts of fantastic things to help you find and solve those bugs. So thank you so much for LogRocket for sponsoring this spooky episode.
Ooh, this next one is a happy SEO ending.
There are definitely worse things to read from others, but the worst thing in my career was to block all search engines from Europe's largest cooking community by accident. Oh, yeah. In the good old days, let's deploy those changes meant to log in to a server by SSH, run 30 commands, and check to see if everything is fine. I remember those days, Wes.
I remember those days very clearly.
There was no visible problem on the website, so we all left it for the weekend. Yeah, I know, not to deploy large changes on a Friday. The source of all bad things that happened was the idea of a colleague to remove our testing installations from Google. Sadly, he pushed it to the wrong branch. As I was already thinking about the weekend, I skipped the check every file of all commits, if they're reasonable, on the checklist for each go live, because, you know, it always works. Yeah, this kind of happens to me, too. Like, you get complacent with things working all the time and that you lack your guard a little bit and something breaks. So setting deny all in the robots.txt did not only lead to 50% loss of visibility in Google measured by Systrix and millions of pages removed from the index, but also lost revenue from ads. If you block Google's crawler, it will not deliver content-related ads on websites, and this burned thousands of euros per day. Luckily, the SEO saw that something was wrong on Monday, and we could fix it very fast. But it burned lots of money, and I was in fear for a full week until we figured out that it was a good accident. Google started to crawl the new content that was better than the old one, and rankings had been higher after 2 weeks than it had been before.
Impressive.
One line of code, a lot of money burned, a horrible week to wait for new search result measurements, and the day that we started to implement automated deployments with security checks that prevented some of the possible mistakes.
So you just ran the probably largest SEO test of the time, which is hilarious. I'm glad it worked out. Next one I call just oof. I couldn't even think of a name for this one. Horror story.
I'm surprised you named all these. I named a whole bunch from last time. I didn't get a chance to name any of these, although I think it's probably for the better because your names are all pretty.
I got the names. You got the ad transitions.
Yes.
So this one, horror story. I wrote Masquerade, a command line tool to anonymize databases with. In one of the earliest versions, I did an array merge, but got the order of the arrays wrong. The content of these arrays was database connection config, the one from a config file and the other from CLI params passed to the binary. I meant for it to have the CLI params take precedence so a cron would run to anonymize a replica of the database. But alas, the config file from the production application took precedence and I anonymized my client's production database on a nightly basis. Oh, we found out a few days later that we had to parse order confirmation emails from SendGrid in order to retrieve the data. I have learned not to run a process like this on a production machine, and now we all use GitLab runners with a scheduled task to anonymize. Whew! Those ones where you can screw it up by accidentally typing the wrong thing or hitting the wrong button or running a command in the wrong directory, spooky.
Spooky. I've fallen and I can't get up. All right. This one is, pretty rough. At my first job, I worked for a company that built a system for monitoring vulnerable folks in care homes. It worked by motion sensors placed on the wall of the house. I pushed a change to the charts that I thought fixed a bug. 2 days later, we received a call that a woman was convinced her elderly father had fallen in the bathroom. She had called him in a panic at 1 a.m. Oh, gosh. That's scary. Turns out, because of a time zone error, the charts were missing data from 12 a.m. to 1 a.m. Certainly my most shameful and costly bug. Yeah, that is frightening. That's very frightening to know that you could write some software that would have that kind of consequence. Very, very scary to
me. Yeah, like that's real, man. I can't even laugh at that one.
That's real.
I'm glad that.
Right. I know. I'm like,
that hurts. Like that person was probably so super rattled. So good story.
Yeah, but, for real. That happened.
Next one. Crypto. I used to work for a startup company that had an ICO back when it was a thing, TM. So ICO is initial coin offering. So when like a new type of crypto comes out, they have an ICO where people can buy in. Launch day is coming and we're preparing for months. The smart contract is already out there on the Ethereum network. No going back. Our website had a countdown and everything for all the investors we spent months acquiring and the potential big ones we had on our list. Big day finally comes and I finally get the wallet address just before launch. Huh, it's a QR code. I uploaded to the website in time and the countdown and excitement. We did it. Not long after, I'm informed the QR code was a placeholder and nobody was able to pay. Yikes. The crypto craze died right after that. So who cares about how much quote unquote money we lost in those few hours? The company went under the next year before I left. They still owe me some money. So that's like under the same yikes as deploying that last one where you had the gambling and you forgot the Boolean of test of true.
There's so many like money ones like that, like lots of money lost or potential for money to lost.
I still do. Like when I launch my courses, I still, even though I test on Stripe all day long, I generate myself a coupon. I set it for like $1 and then I buy the course myself just to make sure it actually works real.
Buy the course yourself, refund yourself, whatever. Yeah, I do that. RMRF, my Halloween horror story. Friday afternoon in the office, working on a Magento site. Frightening enough in itself. I love that note that this author added because it is frightening working on Magento. But anyway, we used to do beer Fridays, but I'm a woman who doesn't drink. So I sat at my desk drinking a glass of Prosecco and ran RMRF, RM-RF to, for those of you who don't know, that command removes recursively all directories of which you specify. Command to delete a folder so I could recompile and accidentally left out the forward slash. Somehow, I deleted the company's entire development server, which contained probably about 60 to 70 websites. The poor DevOps guy spent the entire weekend trying to recover it by some miracle. I still work for the company 5 years later. 60 to 70? Oh my gosh. Yikes. I would delete like one development site and freak out. 60 to 70 production sites. Yikes.
Next one we have is never deploy on Fridays. I work for an e-commerce agency at the time. I made some small updates to our site. I forget exactly what it was. And I thought I'd update the project's dependencies at the same time. So I made an update and deployed on a Friday afternoon. I know. Yeah, so this is what I refer to as a YOLO update, where you're like, 400 updates to my package JSON? Sure, it's probably fine. As you should after any deployment, I went ahead and checked the site for any possible issues, searched for some products, added it to the basket, went through the checkout. All seemed well. I go through the test a second time just to be sure. I deployed on a Friday after all. Better make sure it works, right? No issues spotted. I closed up my laptop and headed home for the weekend. Monday, I arrive at my desk. The mood in the office is more somber than usual. I'm grabbing whatever preferred choice of caffeine was for the day. And the team lead pulls me aside. He does not look like a happy chap. Props to whoever wrote this. This is very well done.
Happy chappy.
Can I see you in the meeting room, please? Oh, no. It turns out that the updates I so bravely deployed caused a basket issue that prevented customers from adding more than one item to the basket at any time. Of course, I never spotted it as I only added one item during my test. The issue was not reported until Sunday. I never got told how much money this cost my client, only that I really, really did not want to know. Deployments had been done in pairs from there on out. Never deploy on Fridays. Ooh.
Yeah, a lot of these people never deploy on Fridays.
Or have a good set of tests. Would have earned a pretty basic test, would have caught that. I'm sure they have a test for it now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how you learn. Next one, $1 million scramble. Hey, you know what? I'd like $1 million scrambled eggs right about now. That sounds good. These aren't scrambled eggs. Okay. We were demoing a product we were building to a potential client, our first ever demo of the product, and it was for a deal worth millions of dollars. So we got a $1 million deal here. A DevOps engineer just so happened to be going through what they thought were our old clusters and deleting them. Our deployment got deleted about an hour before the demo. Oh. It was the maddest scramble I've ever seen to try to recover. Yeah. So if there's any major appointments, don't start deleting stuff. Just wait. You never know. Wait, you're deleting.
You never know. We literally probably had like three or four stories like that so far. Speaking of deleting production, I deleted the production database thinking it was my local because my database client and prod local looked the same. The most recent backup was at 10 a.m. I deleted it at 4 p.m. and there was around 600 orders we had without a backup. We managed to recover 99% of these using email logs, spreadsheets, and bulk inserting. The process of deleting to recovering was from 4 p.m. to 2 a.m. with four engineers. Whew! To this day, I use two database clients, one for local database and one for production staging, and I will only use a read-only access for production. Thankfully, it didn't get me fired. My work handled it very professionally or understanding. Whew! Spicy. That's a spicy one.
Spicy. All right. 500,000 concurrent problems. A lot of problems. A couple of years ago, I was working for a well-known company that offers a very widely used website chat widget. I was working on a few subtle UX changes to the widget that would give users a much more intuitive interactions in the behavior of the chat. After merging and deploying the changes, we started to see a couple small errors. Turns out that anytime anybody clicked on the chat widget, even if there was a friendly message notification inviting them to join a conversation, it would just disappear completely. At this point in the company, we had around 500,000 concurrent users, and around 5% of them would engage with the widget. Upon my discovery of this bug, my heart sank into my stomach and a cold sweat started. I had deployed this and then gone into an hour-long meeting. Resolution: early on, the company decided that deploys and rollback would be easy and instant. Luckily for me, rolling back was as instantaneous and only required clicking a button. I made sure to test my code more thoroughly from now on. Do you have any rollback set up in your deployment process? Because I do, and it saves my butt all the time.
I don't on my DigitalOcean. Like, I could just roll back a commit and redeploy, and it would fix it.
You'd have to redeploy it, yeah.
But no, I think I would like to have something like that.
Yeah, I host on Meteor Galaxy, right? Because it's the Meteor host, and they have like a history of every version you've ever deployed. And so at any given point, it'll tell you, here's the current version, whatever, this is the past version. At any given point, if I have a mistake, I just click the old version and click, go back to this one. And I can go back to any prior version and it just redeploys it for free and instantly.
It just cuts over the domain. Yeah, like Netflix, they'll all do that as well because they just have multiple versions of your app. Instead of one where they update it. Yeah. That's good to know. Next one, deleting a government website. Many years ago, I worked for a company that ran the state of, and I've blanked this out already, website. So this person asked for us to anonymize it because they're worried about the government getting litigious. that's such a good word. litigious. I was trying to debug an error on our staging server, and any time I touched the files on the server, the changes didn't seem to be reflected on the staging website. So I figured, let me just delete everything quickly. So I RMRF the home directory, and still, the website was there. I bounced the server, thinking cache. Still nothing. Finally, my office mate goes, hey, did you know the whole website is down? Which website? The production website. It's 404-ing everything. Facepalm. Oh, and this sounds like this was done way back before version control and things like that, where if you deleted it, it's gone.
Also, RMRF is just so dangerous. Didn't you have something where you used something... I feel like you had this fix. Trash. It's trash, yeah, or something?
Yeah, npm install -g trash -cli, and that will put it in your trash instead of RM. I never use RMRF just because it's scary.
Interesting. Next story. You ruined the surprise. My worst production-related offense happened while I was at a startup in LA. They were trying to become a more modern Evite. What is Evite? They do like gift cards and stuff like, or not great. Like,
it's like you, if you get invited to like a birthday party or like a wedding, you can RSVP and like it comes in over the email. It was pretty popular like 5-10 years ago. Did you get my Evite to the Halloween party?
Did you get my
Evite? Yeah.
Basically, if you were having a party, wedding, whatever, you wanted to have a digital experience, you would use us or a paperless post. Never heard of it.
Yeah, either. Paperless post is another good one.
Seems like you. So anyways, I had this pretty amateur Rails web app API that we had built, typical MVC architecture using active model. We had a bunch of callback methods and two models themselves that would fire on create save events. I actually thought this was pretty slick at the time. And yeah, I think that's pretty sick. We had just deployed a change to run a bunch of DB migrations and it went off without a hitch. We then had a migration script that would walk the DB and upgrade each record with default fields. This script failed to skip the aforementioned callbacks and basically firing off emails left and right for every single event attendee in the system.
Ooh.
Shooting off emails. Yeah. So, that is so funny. That is very funny. So for those of you who aren't picking it up, basically they had a hook on the DB change that would send an email or something and their crawling script just fired off against every record. Now imagine the horror when you're in the middle of America planning a surprise birthday party for your father's 50th with over 100 people and you're waiting to announce until 2 weeks before and all of a sudden a bunch of emails start going out to everyone attending. Or you're a bride planning a wedding and you send out a bunch of emails to your attendees list prematurely. Or you just had a funeral for a family member a month ago and you send out a please attend Ted's funeral email to everybody again. Oh, that one is very painful. Very painful. It was all out pandemonium. Company was freaking out. I won't say for certain that this was the final nail in the coffin for the company, but it certainly didn't help. Oh, gosh. To this day, I'm hyper vigilant when it comes when and where backend code sends emails. I hope this is what you're looking for. This person may have single-handedly killed Evite.
Oh, that's even why, like, when I use like a local development, I'll make sure that I'm using like a mail catcher or temporal email or something, just because if you accidentally trigger 500,000 emails, that's kind of a nightmare to come back from.
Kind of a nightmare. Yeah.
What's not a nightmare though, Scott?
Is it Netlify, our sponsor for this episode? Netlify is certainly not a nightmare. Wes, I don't even know why you put them in the same sentence. It was actually funny. A little bit ago, you started one of these and you're like, you know what? I thought you were going to do a Netlify ad transition. And then you like started reading the next story. So you got me. So Netlify, at Netlify.com is the fastest way to build the fastest sites. As in, you can deploy your front end code on this thing and just with a Git push, look at the wrist and a Git push, your entire site builds and is constantly deploying anytime you push a commit to a specific branch, all for free, easy to use. There's awesome, awesome, awesome features that are added to Netlify constantly. Over 1 million developers currently using Netlify. Isn't that crazy? 1 million developers?
That's a lot.
A lot of people using this thing. There is just a ton of features that allow you to really, really gain productivity like crazy. I host my site in Netlify. I know Wes hosts his site in Netlify, and it is fantastic. You can do all sorts of things like serverless functions or DNS-based analytics, which are actually very, very nice compared to normal script-based analytics. There is even an identity platform that allows you to create a login user account on your front-end code site, all just through Netlify itself. All this and more. So check out netlify.com/syntax and see what everyone's talking about. Because trust me, this is the place to host your front-end code. It is so dang easy and simple.
You know what Netlify has? I just checked. If you go to one of your commits and you can view that commit, it's already built. You can just publish it. You're going to roll it back if you accidentally screw it up.
Hey, cool.
Mr. D-hole.
D-hole.
One time I was working on a client site and running tests to try to debug some email template issues going out from my CMS. Again, I had a mail trap installed locally, so no real emails got sent from PHP's mail function. Okay, so good.
Okay.
Unfortunately, the module I was using uses its own SMTP implementation and bypasses the PHP mail function. So it was funny when the client called our office and asked if my business partner, if he thought his order for Mr. D-hole was real or not. Stop putting bad words in testing.
It was not. So what's kind of lost here is that the word is actually spelled out. They're not just writing D.
No, it's the same word as the sporting goods store from earlier, which we were allowed to say.
So that is much funnier to me that it's another bad word. It seems hilarious that so many people have made this very same mistake. Very funny. Also, these kind of things are a little more harmless than like, you know, sending out a notification about somebody's funeral is not exactly harmless. All right. One expensive race condition. This just happened today, so it's fresh in my mind. Ooh, fresh one. I had built a samples request wizard for an international flooring company on WordPress using jQuery steps and gravity forms. At the end of the wizard, you submit the form by clicking the finish button on the wizard. My code in a WordPress template catches the form finish event, submits the form, then location.href equals thank you very much page. I come to find out that I had built a race condition that sometimes made the page change without submitting the form. Client misses 60% of their leads, boss is furious, and chews me out over Slack. So glad I wasn't in the office. Test reforms in all browsers at all network speeds. So the form was firing an event early and submitting the form without collecting all of the information. People don't like that, especially any sales teams that need to keep track of their people's. Yikes. They don't like that. They don't like it when you take away their leads.
Could have been like huge loss in sales. Like sometimes I submit a form on a website that's like a local business. I'm like, I'm never getting a reply to this. And don't you feel that way sometimes when you're filling out these like janky forms? That one's rough.
Like this is definitely a waste of my time.
That's a perfect example. People always ask like, what's a race condition? Like that is a perfect example where they hit submit and then the code after submit the form was just window.location and they didn't await for the submit to come back properly. So you could forget one await or you don't put the window location in a callback, you're pooched.
Pooched.
And it also works 100% of the time in development because it's fast as hell, right?
Right. That is the big problem there is that it does. It works. Always work like race conditions are so often not apparent in development just because it's super fast.
Yeah. Next one is just called yikes. That's all I could say to some of these questions, these stories that came in. I am a developer in a consulting firm in Sweden writing C# on the back end and using React with either JavaScript or TypeScript and hosting everything in Azure 99% of the time, 1% SharePoint. I was in my last week at my last job, and I was due to start my new job. I worked a 12-hour day to keep up with all the handovers, etc., so colleagues could have a chance to continue working on the solutions that I had taken care of. One project was a process tool hosted in SharePoint Online. The guy who would oversee it had negative 1% experience with SharePoint, which I pointed out to my bosses. But to make things easier, I made a deploy script to ease things a bit. Starts with the terminal and runs the script towards the acceptance environment. Umpteen million errors appeared, which is strange because there should only be about 20 commands. I log into the environment and double checked if I accidentally entered the wrong values in the script, which looked okay according to me, but I get a 404 error when trying to reach the environment. I log into the admin interface and I discovered the site is gone. Also checking the trash can, there are no things there. Very strange. I find that I'm in a different folder than the one where I saved my script. In that folder, there is an old deploy script that was used when the project was started 1,000 years ago, which was not used after this project was finished. The first thing the script does is force delete the site and then try to create a new empty site. Oh no. The site is gone with lists and everything. Lists are like a SharePoint thing, sort of like SQL Lite. There are no backups of the acceptance environment, although that is very important. I feel just a little bit panicked. How am I going to solve this? However, I remember testing a tool 6 months ago to copy entire environments where my first attempt was made here in the acceptance environment. I find the clone environment, it can be used and the same tool to clone it back. It only took 8 to 12 hours of work to create all the new things done in the environment in the last 6 months instead of the X number of hours to rebuild everything from scratch. Woo!
Ooh. Yeah, this is a great use case for delete your old stuff if you don't need it.
No
delete
kidding. You can get it back.
You can get it back.
If you need to.
Cool. Next one, always be closing. When I was in my 20s, I forgot a closing table tag in the mail, a shot that went to thousands. This resulted in the first mail containing one mail's content. The second mail contained two mails' content. The mail servers of the multinational company crashed as a result. Yeah, so dangers of recursive contamination, yeah. I suppose.
And like possibly leaking a sensitive information from one email to another, right? Yikes.
Big guess.
All right. Last one we have here is Adidas. All day I delete a site. I deleted the Adidas Facebook page at 8 p.m. the night before a $3 million spend for ESPN and YouTube homepage takeover. This was back when Facebook apps were big and there was no tiered permissions. I was a tech director and clearing out all the designer project manager accounts so no one would delete anything. Accidentally deleted all the accounts and then deleted the entire page. Our sister media agency called Facebook in the UK and some engineer found the deleted page and re-added it in crisis averted. My boss did not fire me. Yikes.
Hi, it's days like this where I am very happy that my job is as low stakes as it is. I can spend a month working on a course. And I get that course out and I get a chance to review and watch it 800 times before it goes out. If I do by chance happen to release that course with a tiny little typo in it, that is not a problem of the magnitude of any of this that we have read on this show. Be safe and be careful, y'all. Write tests. Do not run RMRF unless you are very sure of it. Although I did that once where I ran git clean in a non-git directory and deleted half the computer. I talked about that last year. So don't do those things and make sure you take good backups.
Man.
Good backups, good tests. Be very careful. Don't push on Friday. Any other parting pieces of advice that you've gained from this?
I just keep thinking about the one with the 500,000 concurrent users because you like do an image tag incorrectly and all of a sudden your support team blows up and like you're causing support extra work, or maybe you have to bring in more people and that you have to pay them. And it's just the mistakes in those environments are just so high stakes. So that's what
high stakes.
And obviously like backups and automated testing and like maybe two keys to deploy sites probably would avert a lot of these, but then we wouldn't have the show every Halloween. So
So please continue to make major mistakes. Of course, none that will result in the permanent harm of anybody. But if 800 people get D-hole sent to them in their text messages, then I think that's probably okay as a bug. That sounds pretty good. Keep sending us those.
Oh, that's great. All right, let's move into some sick picks. I'm going to sick pick something I've sick picked in the past, but I just got a second one of them, and I was just reminiscing about how much I love this thing. So this is a instant read meat thermometer. Really not necessarily just meat.
I gotta get one of these.
Yeah,
man,
like you said this last time I sick picked it. And so if you want to be a good cook, part of why people aren't good cooks is because they don't know when something is cooked all the way through. So they overcook it so they don't die of salmonella poisoning or something like that. And you can, for like $15, you can go get a really good thermometer that you just poke into your food that you're working, and it tells you what it is. And like, I feel like it made me a better cook when I got a really not necessarily like a really nice version, because there's like thermal pens that are like $100. But I got this one. It's called Mr. Sheffer, which is hilarious to me, but it has backlight. The numbers are huge. Most importantly, it reads very fast. So some of these cheap ones you get at the grocery store, you got to leave it stuck in for 15 seconds before it actually reads accurately. Mm. And that's too hot if you're on the barbecue or something, because you have to keep your hand on it, or you got this plastic thing in the way of the heat. So go get yourself a nice thermometer. I have got two of these now. The Mr. Sheffer I had at the cottage. I left it outside. It poured rain on it for days. I dropped it off the deck. Going strong. So I really like it. I'll put a link for it in the show notes.
Mr. Sheffer will be coming to Mr. Tolinsky's house at some point, because I said that at some point, and like, I do need to get one. And just like, it was like 2 days ago, we were cooking some pork and we were using the stick and we got a wafer, and it just is like, you're looking at it, you're like, I don't even know if this is accurate. Yeah, like, I have no idea.
Pork
if this
is the
accurate.
Best one, because at least in Canada, a couple of years ago, they changed the safe temperature for eating pork to 145. And if you pull up nice piece of pork off the barbecue at 145, it'll go up to 145, or sorry, you pull it off at 140, goes up to 145 after resting, you cut it open, you think that is still raw, and it's like there's red in it, and it doesn't look like it's cooked all the way through. But just like knowing, like, yes, it's cooked, I did the temperature on it, it is safe for my family to eat. And it's funny, because something like, I have my like parents over, they're like, are you sure that's cooked all the way? Because they grew up in the age of the higher pork temperature, and they probably went over that because they didn't have thermometers at that time.
I gotta get me a good meat thermometer, especially Mr. Sheffer. Sometimes I just buy things based on the name, and that is a great name. I'm very into the name of the Mr. Sheffer. So what am I going to sick pick today?
Oh, man, I'm just looking online, and it's not called Mr. Sheffer in the States.
Why? Why did they do that to us? Why would they possibly do that to us? Can I get the Canadian version?
The American version comes with a bottle opener.
I would rather get the Mr. Sheffer than the one with the bottle opener.
Oh, no. I found the exact one that I have. It's not called Mr. Sheffer, unfortunately.
That's a huge disappointment, Wes. Very big disappointment. Okay, I am going to sick pick a library, a JavaScript library. And I'm talking about Fastify. Have you heard of Fastify? Fastify.io, Wes?
No.
So I've been diving into the world of Node servers lately because I wanted to see like what's changed since the last time I looked. I know a lot of people talk about Nest.js, not Next, but Nest. And there's like Nest, there's Happy, there's Express, there's Koa. Fastify was the one that's kept on popping up over and over again for me. And I started looking into this, and it's a really neat server. So I will sick pick this. I've been giving it a test out just to see. There's some really neat GraphQL stuff in here, too. And they basically did some neat little benchmarking against Express and Apollo for this GraphQL thing to find that it's like very, very fast. Okay, so here's how fast this thing is. So on their benchmarks page, and this is their own benchmark, so take that for what it is. But according to this, they have some code here, and they got 76,835 requests per second, nearly 77,000 requests per second on Fastify, where Express with the same code was only able to get 38510. So nearly double the amount of requests per second that it was Express was able to deliver with the same code. And same with Happy. Koa was a little bit more, but Fastify was still like 20,000 requests a second more. So obviously this is their benchmark. So, you know, take that with a grain of salt, do your own benchmarks. But Fastify for me has been not only very fast, but very easy. The logging, all the stuff, the setup, the plugin, the whole environment has been very cool. There's a lot of neat plugins involved here. So check this out. If you're looking for a Node server right now, check out fastify.io. It's one that I've been having my eyeballs on quite a bit lately.
Cool. I'll have to check that. It looks like they have a lot of middleware as well, which is something you want to think about if you're picking a new server. Like, you probably are going to need a bunch of plugins or middleware. It looks like they've got hundreds of community ones. So sick.
And there's some that like are like make not only GraphQL servers easy, but also make, I don't know if you've ever gotten into Data Loader.
No.
There's like an issue in GraphQL where, like, let's use level up tutorials as an example. I say I want all of the playlists on the site, and then I want all of the tutorials on the site. And if you set up your GraphQL server in a normal way where you have your resolver and then another resolver, and then one calls the other, you could end up in a situation where you're getting like 500 database queries, because let's say you have 20 tutorials, each tutorial has 20 videos in it, and like the way your system might be set up, it's not going to do all of those requests in one fell swoop. It's going to do the one and then the individuals and loop in and whatever. So Data Loader is like a caching mechanism that prevents large queries like that from being a problem. It's basically a caching solution that will make your N plus one queries way more performant, like exceedingly more performant. And so there's a really neat GraphQL server in here that has like Data Loader essentially built into it. They make it like part like a first class citizen. And it really solves a lot of the pain points I was having personally with Data Loader. So I'm into this. It's very cool.
Sweet. I'll have to check that out. The API looks similar to Lambda instead of Express-like, which is kind of cool. It's not that much different, but
yeah,
I just noted that. Cool.
Shameless plugs.
I am going to shamelessly plug all of my courses, westboss.com, which is my new website. Check it out. It's /courses. Has a list of all my courses. Most recent one being Master Gatsby. Make sure you use a coupon code SYNTAX for $10 off.
Sick. I'm going to shamelessly plug leveluptutorials.com, where you can sign up to become a pro member and gain access to a new tutorial series every single month, along with our entire catalog, which is constantly growing. And let me tell you, I am really excited for the next upcoming year. We have 3 or 4 guest teachers lined up that you are all going to be very excited about. I can't talk too much about it just yet, but we have some guest creators coming on. I have some new courses coming out. I have one that just came out on Svelte Animations that is fantastic. We have a new course every single month. It's sort of like a magazine subscription. Check out what the latest course is. So leveluptutorials.com/pro. Sign up for the year and save 25%.
Beautiful. All right. Thanks so much for tuning in. We will catch you on Monday. Have a spooky Halloween.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.